I'm Richard Lannan, Rides with Canon, and this is the Glazing Insider Industry Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Nozzle. The Nozzle team captures photos, videos and drone footage from locations across the UK to create content for your social media and case studies for your website. To find out more about Nozzle's pay-as-you-go and monthly packages, visit nozzle.media. In this episode, I talk with Kevin Caveney from Nationwide Windows. In this conversation, Kevin talks us through his fenestration journey, all the way from how it started to the position he's in today. So, without further ado, let's get started. Kevin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for coming on. How did you get into the fenestration world?
I've been in the fenestration industry for over 35 years, I think, now, and I fell into it like most people.
Right. And so how did you fall? How did it start?
So I started my journey in windows at WHS, which was a plastic tools company. They started manufacturing windows. I was working for them at the time. They asked me to step across into the window factory. So I started there, really setting up their lines initially, and then working, making windows and doors on the line, and then really got promoted through the ranks within that organisation.
Right. So how long were you there for?
I was there for about 12 years, I think. 10 right. to 12 years, something like that. I noticed, listening to a couple of your other podcasts, that a couple of people, Mark Dickinson mentioned from John Fredericks, back in the early days, his involvement in getting a new system together with WH Smiths and Bowwaters, as it was. I was involved on the other side of that. So when Mark mentioned about his system, small sash, I was one of the guys that was on the factory at the time, working for Robert Holriggle, actually doing the development products to go out for that line. I seem to remember in that podcast, he mentioned 30 days. It sounded very easy when you see 30 days. I can tell you we were working night and day to get that through.
I was going to say, yeah, he did say 30 days, didn't he? So that was you and that was...
Skipped over the 30 days, I thought. He should have hanged on to that a little bit longer.
So day and night, that's what it takes.
Yeah, it was... Anybody that knew Robert Holriggle, and again, I think Mark mentioned there that great designer, probably done most for the window industry in the UK, really. He could be a volatile character, but I always got on really well with Robert. And it was one of those, although I was running the factory at that point, he would sort of come late of an evening, we've developed this, we've just had a prototype bit of tooling done, can we go into the factory, see if we can put it together? So that involved me sort of modifying machines and things like that just to try and get it through, really, to prove almost the concepts that that Robert was coming up with and the route that he was taking. So obviously when it went into John Fredericks, and as with most things, you get teething problems. My colleague who worked alongside me at the time, a guy called Steve Bakewell, who I think he's still at Mika, he would then have to go up onto John Fredericks' factory floor to make sure it was going through there. So it was intense times, but obviously it was very rewarding.
Yeah.
Being involved in stuff that's new to the market, I'm really quite innovative for what it was back in the day. Really exciting, really interesting stuff, so you didn't mind.
Wow. Yeah, I suppose a lot of people forget about that. They forget about where things start from and how it all develops. And
well, back in the day when I first started joining Smiths, the guy that owned that business was a guy called Fred Smith. He basically got an order from Birmingham City Council to look to start replacing their windows and came up with what was then System 1. Started sort of developing that, went over to Germany, bought some old tooling that was over there, brought it over, made System 1, then brought Roberts on board to do the design, and then developed their own system, realised there was a marketplace for it, and then obviously put the window factory in place there. And I have to say, it was probably one of the most interesting times in my career, certainly in the window industry. Found it very exciting at the time, being at the forefront of something, and you knew you was at the forefront, because as with most things that are beneficial comes pain, doesn't it? And everybody felt that pain, that growing pain through the business. But nevertheless, it was really exciting. And I think if he was committed when he was working for WH Smiths as it was back in the day, you got looked after. You know, they valued you as an individual within that business, as does lots of private businesses, really.
I'm just sort of thinking, what did the day look like back then? When you were going through these, in that 30 days, for example.
So when I first started at the tools factory, I was, I just got a young family. So I suppose back a step, what I always tell everybody is obviously, I come from a large family, one of six children. education was important in our house, family home, but as soon as you become working age, you got to go out and find your own way. Stopped on, did my exams, did okay at my exams. And I always remember sort of a friend of mine who left, didn't stop to do his exams. We left in the September, saying to me, I've lined you an interview up for the Monday. We finished school on the Friday for the Monday. Going home, please, told my parents, I've got an interview lined up. My mother said to me on the Monday morning for the interview, make sure you take a packed lunch with you. I was going for an interview, didn't really understand why I needed a packed lunch. She explained to me that if they ask you to start, you say you can as soon as possible. So I went to the interview. Sure enough, they asked me, how soon can you start? Just come out with the line. My mother told me, as soon as possible. So okay, we'll take you down to the factory floor. So I went down on the factory floor to start a job. And coincidentally, the very first thing I did is, and I didn't realise at the time, they put me on a job, which was an engineering company, and they put me on a job which was effectively countersinking what looked like little top hat washers. Give me a pair of gloves, because of health and safety. Didn't say anything about the tie I was wearing. Bear in mind I'm working on a drill. So down on the factory floor, countersinking these. I spent 2 weeks doing that job. They give me these pair of gloves. You couldn't hold the items within the gloves. So after about 2 or 3 days, I went back to the supervisor, foreman as it was then, and sort of said to him that I just can't grip these. Well, you've got to make do, was the answer. So I ended up sort of going to speak to one of the guys that was in the tool room to ask if he could modify a bit of a vice for me, which he did. And then I put the items in this vice to went and put them through the countersinking tool, which was really just a drill. Changed the drill bit so it wasn't as abrasive to countersink them. And then 2 weeks in, they told me I'd done the biggest quota that they'd ever had in all the time they'd been there. So, of course, as a young lad, I was buzzing about that. The reason I mention it is when I first started in the window industry, those top hat washers were actually being used to fit the spags on the windows. I didn't realise at the time, but the first thing I did was link to windows then. You know, so it's almost like the path is sort of mapped out for you, really. So, yeah, so to answer what a day looked like, I met my wife when I first started first job. I was a dad at 18, and so when I got to WH Smiths, I was doing two jobs actually in the tools factory. I'd work there on a day, and then I'd work for an engineering maintenance company over at Longbridge Rover, as it was, and I'd work night shifts over there, sort of 6 hours over there. And the only reason I went into the window side is because it was slightly better money, because I was doing a lot of traveling to and from both jobs, burning the candle at both sides. I fell asleep at the wheel, basically, and nearly ended up in a crash. Oh. So I decided I needed to knock it on the head. Went across into the window side, thinking there was going to be more opportunity there, and clearly there was. You know, it worked out for me. But a day when we was doing it, I'd go in, 7 o'clock in the morning. I'd probably be there till, typically, I'd be there till sort of 7 o'clock of an evening. But when we were doing the development stuff, it'd be 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning that we'd be finishing, then back in the following morning. To bear in mind, I was running the factory at that time, wow. So you still had to do a normal shift.
Yeah.
Towards the end of my period at Bowwaters, as it was then, we put two shifts on. I was the factory manager at the time, so I was in there running, a bit naive really, running two shifts. So I'd go in at 6 o'clock in the morning, work through till sort of 10 o'clock, and then be back in at 6 o'clock, and then work Saturdays as well.
Wow.
So long days, but you don't put it in, you don't get it out.
True. And you've got a very understanding wife.
Yeah, very understanding. Yeah. You probably know, I mean, when we spoke in the past, I've sort of said, you know, without my wife being there, you know, I couldn't do half the things I did. You know, she just let me get on with it, really. Downside is now I'm older, probably miss my kids growing up. Try to make a bit more my grandchildren. Don't regret that time.
No.
But looking back, you do have to get the work-life balance a bit better than I did in those early days.
Yeah, I think so, especially I'm fascinated by, so when you were doing the night shift as well, the sort of the 6 hours, what did that, you sort of finish at 5 and then straight over?
Straight back in. So yeah, really, don't get me wrong, I suppose really as a business, they probably should have been saying you're doing too many hours, but at that point, you're staff.
Yeah.
You're not on a clock card. Problem happens, you need to be there, don't you? You need to see it through. And when we were trying to get the twilight shift, is what they called it, up and going, as with, I think, lots of businesses, it's an opportunity if you've not got the right people in post for the outputs not to be where they need to be to justify the turnaround and the investment by the business.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think I've always been company man, focused on the people that pay my wages. So I felt I needed to be there. Nobody was pressuring me to do that. It was more about me really feeling that I needed to be there. And that involved everything, really, from doing the general management stuff you would expect to actually being out on the factory floor and making the stuff. That's where I came from, you know, making windows. Did a bit of everything in my time, from sort of fabrication through to surveying and a tiny bit of fitting. Although I'm the worst silicon person on the planet, I cannot seal anything and keep the lines right, but nevertheless, I've done a bit of everything. And I think that helps me, especially with the development side of things back in the early days, understand the products that I'm out there and that I'm trying to educate our customers on the right products for them, really.
Yeah, and also, when you mentioned the very first job, you improved it within a couple of days, which that's a good mind to have, efficiency and, well, safety as well, to be honest.
Certainly. I mean, I think it does. I mean, I've always tried to look at that, you know. I mean, again, back to that first job, you know, I remember when I went and spoke to the foreman originally and sort of said to him, is there something better? You know, his attitude was, that's the way we've always done it, that's the way we'll always do it. Now, keep in mind, you know, when I went for the interview, you know, you go to the plush offices and there's a, it was this company called, it was Ace Hydraulics, I can say, because they're no longer around, but it was Ace Hydraulics, and it was all plush and all nice. Turn up for the interview, it's great, give you your first job. You walk over the road into what was Newtown in Birmingham, anybody that knows it, an old industrial area that was full of suds oil, dirty swarf all over the floor, sawdust thrown everywhere, a real backstreet place, if I'm honest with you. The new health and safety needed to be applied, but really didn't know how to apply it. And their attitude was, well, we don't get many people dying here, so we should be okay. So it's a bit of an education when you've literally, you know, left school on the Friday and you're starting that on a Monday. It made me realise very early on that you really have to look after yourself to a degree. Mm-hmm. And that if you want to be respected and get good results, that you need to think a little bit outside the box. I know that's a bit of a cliche, but a little bit outside the box, really, to come up with solutions yourself. And I've done that all my working life, really.
How did people, I'm fascinated, because this school kid comes in, improves a process within a week and got it up and running. How did they take to that? Was
it, you get mixed. Two sides of every street, don't you? You know, I have to say, I'd like to think I'm a people person. The people I was working with, I got on really well with them all. Can't think there was anybody really I didn't get on with, and everybody was okay. I'm not one to sort of shout things from there. I just get on and do it, and if it helps makes my job easier, then great. The owner of the business, he was a volatile character. I always got on very well with him. The only reason I left that, the only one person I didn't get on with in that business was his son, and that was only because his son, I think I put his nose out of joint because he fancied my wife at the time. So ultimately, you know, we were both vying for the same woman, and that was really the reason I ended up going, because he was making my life difficult there. So I sort of come away from that business and then went into sort of air conditioning and things like that for a while, and then ended up at WH Smith's, as I say.
Right, I see. So firstly, you won. That's apparent.
Yeah. I won, she lost. I always say I'm a good judge of character. She's a really poor one.
I like that. So what's the next step then after appearance?
So I worked there, as I say, between 10 and 13 years, I think I was there. So sort of 13 years if you class the tools time in there, but sort of 10 years really directly on the window side of things, because there was that interim period where I was doing a little bit of both for them. And then from there, I was made redundant from that role, real low in my career, if I'm honest with you. The business has been bought out a couple of times. Rightly or wrongly, I've never been a person that just says yes. I have a viewpoint, and I will put that viewpoint across. I'll always toe the line, but I'll always put my viewpoint across. I always thought that's what management was about. I was a manager at that company, and I think that probably rubbed one or two people up the wrong way. They did some buyouts. They then decided that really all of the management structure that was at my level went. That's probably the last one to go, but it right was on the wall. I was always quite hard with the guys that I worked with on the factory. I always wanted good numbers out of them. I was always pushing them. And I always remember, I think that was in November 1999. And I thought, great, going into the millennium, no job. I left there, I think it was on the Wednesday, and on the Thursday, I got a phone call from a guy that used to work for me on the factory as a fabricator, who I hasten to say, I always felt I was really tough with. And he said, look, I've started at this window company in Tamworth, which is my hometown. They really need somebody to come and sort the factory out. Is it something you'd be interested in? Nothing ventured, nothing gained. I sort of never heard of them. But I said, yeah, okay. Who do I need to speak to? I'll speak to the boss. I'll get him to give you a call. Within 20 minutes, the guy phoned me. I popped down and seen him. And I started, or he wanted me to start there and then, but I said I would start after Christmas. That didn't quite pan out. I ended up starting there and then because it was sort of, okay, yeah, starting the new year, but could you just come and have a look at these jobs? We've got some problems going on. So I popped up there, and you know what it's like. You then start looking at the jobs, and effectively you're working for no money. You're just helping them out. So I ended up starting there, and I was there. And that was a company called Window Man, and I was there for 10 years.
Wow.
I think when I joined, I think turnover at that company was about 250 grand, and when I left, it was about 10 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's quite a journey. So you had a lot of growing pains and everything to go through as well.
Yeah, and I had to do a lot more in that organisation because there really was just me and the owner. And then obviously the guys on the factory doing the stuff and the installers, but there was no management structure as such really. And we had some really good guys. I've always had good guys work for me, if I'm honest with you, from the factory point of view. I suppose I look back really and I do think to myself that you're nothing without people that are around you really. And I have listened to these podcasts and everybody really from time to time comes across how they've done it on their own. You're nothing if you don't have support, if I'm honest. And I know there's been lots of people that have worked and supported me through my journey, including the guy that sweeps the factory floor. You know, it's important. Actually, sorry, I digress, but I had a lovely Facebook message the other day. There was a guy when I was at WHS, Bow Waters, who it was. He was a bit of a difficult character, shall we say. And I pushed him whilst we were there to do sign language. He needed something a little bit more than the job. Very, very bright kid, but he needed a little bit more of something to do. We got a deaf guy, which I'd taken on, that was working there, and he was feeling a little bit out of things. So this gentleman, John, I asked him if he would go on a sign reading course. He was there, wasn't keen, really pushed him down that route. And he sent me a Facebook message about 3 weeks ago saying how the decision has changed his life. He now is the coach for the deaf women's team, England women's team at football.
Wow.
So he sent me this message from the States. He's out there, he's touring at the minute. And since leaving the business himself, WH Smith back in the day, he's only ever really worked with deaf people. So I was really pleased, really touched by that.
Yeah, that's really good.
Because it makes you feel that you do influence somebody else's life.
Mm. That's really good. Yeah, you don't get that very often, do you?
No, you don't. I'll be honest. I mean, as I say, to a guy to get me to come and do a job, you know, you'd think I was giving this guy who put my name forward for the window man role, you know, I felt I was really tough on him because he did do a bit of ducking and diving, you know what I mean? And for him to, I felt, you know, he's one of those guys you probably see in the street and want to punch your head in, if I'll be honest with you, you know, and nevertheless, he's recommending me to be his boss at the next place. So, you know, it makes you think, well, perhaps, you know, you are being okay, but I've always tried to be fair with people, firm but fair, but, you know.
It might be. Do you think it's something like they knew where they were with you and they want that guy? They want someone that's just going to keep a tight ship.
I always want that. I always want to know where I stand and I go out my way to try and make sure everybody else knows where they stand. You have to be a bit diplomatic sometimes.
Mm.
And we all know that because people can take offence. But I'm not scared of telling people if they're not doing what they should be doing.
Yeah.
And equally, I do like to tell people when they're doing a good job. So, you know, it is pretty black and white. I think most people want to do a good job. Usually the people that are not doing a good job is because they don't understand what you're expecting from them. If you make it clear what you're expecting, 9 times out of 10, they'll want to do it, won't they? Nobody wants to come to work and get grief. That's the bottom line.
Mm.
Those that want that are in the wrong job, aren't they? You know, it's not the right thing for them.
Yeah.
And you've got to be brave enough to recognise that and tell them that. It's not the right job for them. But it's never done me any harm having that approach, I'll be honest.
So in those roles, that's what you had to, you know, hire in and fire in.
Yeah, that was probably other than here, you know, very small team here, but everywhere I've been, it's always been hire and firing. when I was at Smith's, call it Smith's, but Bowater. I don't know, 60, 70 people in the factory. I was responsible for hiring and firing all of those. When I was at Windermere, we probably had at its peak 30-ish people, including fitters. That was my job as well. I won't name individuals, but I've ended up having to, in previous employment, you know, dismiss members of the family that was actually my employers.
Wow.
Which is always difficult.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But the rules are the rules, and, you know, you can't, you know, they apply to everybody, let's be honest. And I think that creates a bit of respect as well. You know, that if people see others thinking they can get away with it, you know, the lowest denominator wins. So you have to make sure that you're always looking at who's pulling the team down, really.
And I also think, thinking about that, the actual owners probably appreciate that as well, because they don't have to do it.
Certainly the one individual I'm thinking about, at the time it's very difficult, because obviously I'm making a decision that he's then having to answer to his family about. As time went past, yes, as you do, you know, you're in the pub and you have a beer, and, you know, certainly that individual was telling me that, you know, done him a favour, really, because he couldn't do it, couldn't be seen to do it because of difficulties that would have created within his home life.
Yeah.
But almost able to use me as well. He's in that role. He's got to make that decision. It's his baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and me sort of saying, well, that's the way it is, you know. So, it is difficult, but equally, I've had my brothers working for me, and I've ended up sacking two of my brothers in the past. You know, it is what it is. You know, at the end of the day, as I said to you, if it's not the right job for them, then who are they kidding? You know, they drag the team down. If the business is not successful, then everybody loses their job. You know, and you have to look at the majority rather than the minority, regardless of who the minority are.
Yeah. And also, I'm thinking, your brother's younger or older?
The two that I had working for me, one older, one younger.
Right. Mm. Yeah, I could imagine that being interesting, especially your older brother.
To be fair, my brothers are sound. You know, they understood that they were taking the mickey. You know, just little things like not turning up on time. You can't rely on them. If you can't do that, you know, they're just, to be fair, I know it sounds a bit blasé, but they're an employee of the business, you know.
Yeah.
Family's left at the door, isn't it, really? Mm. And, you know, we get on great. I've got a great family, you know. There's never been any animosity with that, certainly from my side anyway. And none that they've ever shown me.
Yeah.
That I can see. They're probably talking about me behind my back, but...
No, that's good.
They're generally good.
So, you're there 10 years. What happened next?
So, the business I was at, Windowman, it got into some difficulties. They got an accountant there. So the owner, so it's a very small team. The owner looked after all the finances, and then he had an in-house accountant, and then obviously he had accountants outside. And the in-house accountant, unfortunately, did some fraud within the business. But I think that came, if I'm honest with you, that came at a time when I think the owner was losing interest in it as well. So I was approached, really, somebody within in our industry. Had put my name forward, I believe, to Nationwide, and sort of said, Nationwide are looking for somebody. Would you be interested in having a chat with them? And it was a bit of a dilemma, although it was a difficult time for the business. I was certainly, as an individual, I was secure. And there was a future for me in whatever guise that business was going to be. I've got some shares in elements of the business as well. But I thought at the time, really, that the move was probably the right time for me. So I thought, I'll just come over and I'll have a chat, as you do with these things. And I came over and I met John, Daryl and Adrian. I had a sit-down chat with them. And again, I remember at that interview, them sort of saying to me, well, if we were to offer you a position, what projects could you bring over? As everybody does in this industry. And I'd like to think I'm an honest person, and I sort of explained to them that if I was doing my job correctly at the last business, I couldn't bring any accounts. Not, I wouldn't want to, if I'm honest with you. And I walked out of the meeting, I thought, really not like the guys, you know, but I thought that was it, really. I then got approached by a couple of other companies I went to have a chat with. I was still employed at this point. One of those were Smith's back in the day. They asked me to come back in for a chat. And then I got Adrian, phoned me up, said, we'd like to make you an offer. And I was, if I'm honest, the role was a business development role, which I was MD at the last place. So it felt like it was going to be a bit of a step back. But obviously, my gut feel was telling me this was a business that was looking forward, and the business I was in was a stagnating business at best, maybe a business that wasn't going to exist long term into the future, certainly not in the guise it was. And then I got an offer from Smiths to come back there, but they wanted me really to come back and manage a factory as I was before, that I'd done that. So I said that, yeah, I'd be interested in coming over, come over and joined here, and the rest is history, as I say.
Wow. And you've been here now?
13 years.
13 years.
13 years. 13 good years as well. I really like Daryl, John, and the guys that are here. They're, it's a good family feel business. I've always enjoyed that personal type of business. As I said to you, at Smith's back in the day, it changed when it got bought out a number of times. It was really looking for a return on everything. It wasn't looking forward as a business. It was more about how can they cut costs everywhere, get the most that they can out of their customer base, which meant all the things about supporting fabricators really was going on the back foot. All of the development really was going on the back foot. The only development they were really looking to do at any time was really to add a string to its bow, to fatten the calf, if I'm honest, to make it a bit more attractive in the for the next acquisition. That's the way it was feeling to me. And when I went back in, I thought, because it was a good business when I left it, you know, and when they asked me to go back in and have a chat, I went back in really with the expectation that things had changed and that it was probably back going back to where it was. I went in, an individual that I had the interview at that point with, but I went back in and he gave me no confidence at all. Although I bumped into obviously a hot couple of old faces that were saying, oh, great, coming back and all that. And I was non-committal at the time, but I came out of there and I said to the wife, you know, I'd gone there, and although it's a great business and was a great business, I genuinely felt for me that it wasn't the right step. It was, you know, the package was better than I was being offered here, if I'm honest with you. But it didn't feel right, whereas the individuals I met here felt right, privately owned. I think one of the things I seem to remember them saying is that they no aspirations really to be the biggest in the sector. They just wanted to be respected and be one of the best in the sector. That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, certainly I think that's still a philosophy they're carrying today, I'll be honest, that you know, they just want to be, you know, one of the better guys out there that's doing it.
So how, since joining the role that you've been in, how has it developed?
It's developed quite a bit, really. You know, I mean, as with most things, you evolve with the business, don't you? And you evolve with the needs of the business. So what I thought was originally just going to be almost looking after accounts and developing those accounts really very quickly turned into finding work, bidding for work, securing work, and then looking after those accounts. And I really enjoy that, if I'm honest with you. I'd like to think, I wouldn't say that really I'm selling anything, I'll be honest with you. I see my role really is just being honest with people, finding the clients, telling them what we can do, but probably as importantly, telling them what we can't do. And being honest with them that, and if, you know, the fit's right and your price is right, they'll do business with you. I think if you go in with a salesman's attitude to these things, selling them the dream, which lots in our sector do, let's be honest, sell the dream, then disappear, the salesman disappears into the sunset. You know, I've had that in my working career. I certainly know accounts where that's been their experience of things. Well, that's a short-term view, isn't it? Mm-hmm. If you want to maintain longevity with an account, you need to be there from day one and available all the way through that journey with them. And that's what I try and do, if I'm honest with you. So it's evolved really that rather than just managing, it's about trying to find a path through certainly the commercial market that's good for the business and hopefully good for our customers as well.
I suppose, though, from a sales point of view, your technical knowledge is always there.
Absolutely. I mean, lots of people come into our sector thinking you can sell windows and doors. And again, I know it's a bit of a cliche and it's probably been said by others on your other podcasts, but anybody in the window industry spends their life looking at windows. Everybody else looks through windows. And when you go and meet, particularly in the social housing side of things, where a specification has probably been generated by a supplier somewhere down the line, that all he's interested in doing is really getting his products listed in there. We all know the systems companies, that's the way they've worked. We all know that's where the hardware companies work. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong in that. But equally, they're more interested in selling their product rather than trying to identify what the needs of the customer actually are. I think once you understand what the customer's looking for and then, you know, providing them with a way of achieving that, and that might be, you know, with products that we're offering that's not in their spec, and pointing out what the good of that is of our product range and what the shortcomings are of that, then you find really that when you know what you're talking about, they've probably been given a spun a line before, and they ask you questions, they ask you loaded questions, and when you want answer those questions honestly, I think it flags up where they've perhaps been led down a path previously. So that builds confidence, and I'd like to think that builds mutual respect, really.
Yeah, especially when you say, no, that can't be done. Oh, they believe it because you know.
That sales, the hardest part of sales is saying no, let's be honest. Anybody can say, yeah, anybody can give product away. You know what I mean? You know, we're in the business, as every business is, about making money. It's just manufacturing and installing windows is just the commodity we do use to do that. You know, I come up regular against tenders, and you think, well, you know, how are they still winning this work at these rates? Because it's just not viable. The pricing's not there. But you find that they either can't maintain those projects or the service isn't there. And I think clients get wise to that eventually. You know, once bitten, twice shy. The problem with the with the commercial sector is a lot of time those individuals will move from organisation to organisation as well. So sometimes the pain that they've had at an organisation is left. So they go, the pain goes with them. So new broom comes in and we'll have to learn the same lessons again sometimes. And that can be a bit frustrating.
Did you ever imagine starting in that factory that you'd be sat in some, what I can imagine, some very nice offices when you visit to that?
I always had aspirations personally to do well. I was a dad very young. I've got two lads. So sort of first child at 18. I'd always had a strong work ethic. I'd like to think my kids have got a strong work ethic as well. And I realised coming from a big family background that if you don't apply yourself, you don't get anything in life. So I genuinely knew that you had to apply yourself, but I always felt, it's probably a bit deep this, but if I'm honest with you, education is really important. But through my working life, I've seen lots of people be told that education is everything. Well, it's not everything. There are lots, you're still going to need somebody to, you know, plumb your pipes in a home. You're still going to need somebody to wire stuff around your house. They still need practical people out there. And I think sometimes when people get to a level of management, they look at it as effectively they're there and then they have workers below them that do the stuff. But without those workers, in my view, you can't do anything. So certainly from where I sit, coming from being a worker, I've always thought, well, actually, I've probably got some ideas that these people that are sitting in the offices have not thought about, and you just need the opportunity to share them. And if you share them and you can speak to people, then you should do all right, shouldn't you?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I like that.
I mentioned to you earlier about Robert Holriggle, how Robert Holriggle was a fearsome character at times. You know, he genuinely was. Those that weren't close to him did genuinely, I think, fear him, you know, because he was very volatile. He knew what he wanted. He knew how it should go, how it should work. And if you couldn't cotton onto that quickly enough, you very quickly, particularly in the early days, especially with the language barriers that was there, he lost his cool from time to time. And there would, you know, you'd be out of the factory and it'd be blowing up. But for me, as an individual, my memories, best memories of Robert and his wife, Maya. Maya was my direct boss. And I have to say, she's probably one of the best people I've ever worked for. He's been in their front room on a Friday evening at a house party doing My Old Man's a Dustman, me and Robert, drunk on grappa. You know, and I was probably at the time, I don't know, early 30s, and he got me absolutely leathered. And he thought it was very funny to do that as well, by hasten to add.
A man of your experience within the industry, you must have some stories.
So, yeah, I mean, we've all got lots of stories about individuals that we know within the industry, those that have been in the industry a long time, their paths cross. Probably need a bit more time to think about some of those without dropping people in it. But you know what it's like. You're traveling all around the world, certainly to Germany, Europe. You meet people over there. There's a friendly face. You have a few beers, and then sometimes things go a bit awry. So yes, there's lots of stories out there.
I think you just summed up fenestration in that straight away. Things can go a bit awry when you've got a bit of alcohol, but yeah, brilliant. I like that. It's a fascinating journey you've had. It's genuine. I think people really won't understand until they listen to this what you've actually been through and how you've done it.
I've certainly been, as I say, you know, it's from an individual's point of view, I'm pleased with the way my career's gone. I think, and I'd like to cut this out if John and Darryl are listening to it, but this is probably the best business in the wind industry I've ever worked at. Got a lot of time for those two individuals there. They're good guys, genuinely good guys. There's lots in our industry, and certainly when I started out back in the 80s, and those that have been in it a long time will know, there are lots of characters, not all of them good in our industry. And you go for a long time in your career, particularly when you're in on the sales side, and I hasten to add, I've only really done sales as such since I've been at Nationwide. But double glazing salesman, you know, what is it? Second-hand car salesman, estate agent, and then double glazing salesman. There's been lots of bad rep there, really. So I certainly take my role seriously in that, you know, you shouldn't promise things that you can't do. You shouldn't lead people down the wrong path. If your product's good enough, if your business is good enough, then you just need to tell them what that is, really. And they either want to work with you or they don't want to work with you. I still see, you know, it's not as bad as it was, but, you know, you still get the hard sales out there. You still see now, even when you've gone into social housing provider and somebody's gone in there to push the product so hard that it turns people off the product, if I'm honest with you. So sometimes, you know, I have had this, you know, that you'll go in, you'll have a half an hour, 20-minute meeting with somebody and they're not interested, but then they might phone you afterwards because you've been in there and you've had a chat, told them what you do, and then walked away, not tried to sell them anything. And I think that works, really. Mm. You know, you don't need to sell if the product's right, do you?
No. No,
your product and service is right, then you don't need to sell it.
Yeah.
You just need to be let them know that you're the person there to support them.
Yeah, I like that. I think a lot of people...
Everybody needs an advocate in the business, don't they?
Yes.
I think, I'm just trying to think back to some of the podcasts I've heard you do, and again, I think Mark was saying from John Fredericks that, you know, people come into our sector thinking they know how the sector works. It's a bit unique, really, I think, that... it does operate differently. It's not like a car manufacturing plant. And I think he made the analogy that people don't interact with their end customers in those sectors. And that is so true. That is so true. But people also do that, you know, from a social housing point of view. They forget, they think, you know, Wibbly Wobbly Council is their customer. It's not. It's the person whose house you're putting the product in. That's your customer. Your client might be the social housing provider, but your customer is the end user. And it's getting the products right for them, really, because that's what the council's jobs are. They just want the right products, don't they, for their customers.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite opening.
It's a bit deep, isn't it?
I think some people need to listen to that.
A bit deep, isn't it?
I think you'll get... It's probably just business, though, isn't it? You get some of the companies, you know, they're all fighting for business. They're trying to stay and keep going. And I think, you know, sometimes you do lose the way a little bit and you do forget who your customer is.
Yeah, and it's recognising, I think, sometimes that when you're, you know, that... You may be earning a good living yourself. You may have a lovely house, but, you know, there might be somebody who's not doing as well as you that you're going into their property. Well, it might be a rented property, but you're going into their property to carry out works there. Well, you shouldn't disrespect them. You know, ultimately, they're doing their best in their life to get the best outcomes for their family. And, you know, everybody's different, you know. So I think everybody should get a bit of respect, really.
Wise words, I like that.
Oh, I don't know about that. Get a bit deep, don't I? You'll have me crying in a minute.
No, that's it. Well, it's like therapy for some people. So you haven't started crying, so that's a good sign. There is one area that I was thinking about. You mentioned singing.
Singing is one thing I can't do. I'm not shy. You might have guessed.
I was going to say.
I think we've been out one or two occasions. And you know I like to get up and have a dance.
And you were teaching me how to dance, yes.
Yeah, I'll have a dance anywhere.
A quote.
I'll get up and sing, but I know how to empty a pub.
I just think it back to something along the lines of, that's the trouble, you youngsters, you don't move your hips.
Sorry, love you.
And I absolutely love that you thought I was a youngster. So that's what I think of.
Well, the trouble is, I still think I'm a youngster. You know, I think I got to 21 and that's it, it stopped for me. So The only difficulty is now I get home and I get up the following morning, I find I can't move my ankles. And, but yeah, I like to go out and shake it a bit. Shake it a little, have a good drink.
I was just checking you weren't in a band or anything, or, you know, just...
Well, yeah, I'm usually that guy that gets up on stage and they're trying to get him off, you know what I mean? but as I say, you know, it's, I just genuinely think, you know, life's too short. You should enjoy yourself on the journey that you're on. I'd like to think, and I would hope that most people that know me think I'm a people person. I always think I see the best in people. Certainly that's my starting position anyway. I hope they don't, but I'd rather people disappoint me than assume that there's something that they're not. So with that in mind, I always just go out and do my own thing, if I'm honest.
I like that. And that's a nice positive way of looking at it. And I suppose you could go either way with your experience, all those people in the factories. You could really, I mean, you trying to hire people at that sort of level with that amount of people, you get to know people very quickly.
Well, again, I mean, I like sport, I like football and things. Not played at any level like Daryl's played at, but I hasten to say, me and Daryl do a little bit of football during the week, and he's my strike partner. He's not quite as good as me, but he's getting close. But, you know, with my lads being at that sort of age, you know, I've been employing, you know, their mates and dismissing their mates. And yet I still see them around my local town and they're all good, you know. They're all fine. They'll come and buy me a beer in the pub. They're a bit older now. They'll joke about, oh, I understand why you got shut on me, because now I'm a bit older, I can see it. So genuinely I take from that, I must have been doing it in the right way.
Yeah.
But is there ever a right way to get rid of somebody or give them the sack? There isn't really. You've just got to be fair, haven't you? And I think if you're true to yourself about that, and you're doing it for the right reasons, that people come round and understand that, although it's a tough decision at the time.
Yeah. Well, on that note, it's probably about time for the questions. So, in the whole of your journey, is there a low point that sticks out for you? And it might be the bit that you touched on earlier.
Yeah, the low point for me was being made redundant from Bow Waters, as it was at the time. That was a real low. As I said to you at the time, I was doing two shifts, you know, running two shifts, trying to sort of keep the factory turning over. It had lost its way. But I certainly, as an individual, felt that I was going above and beyond. And I understand when you get a bit older and you step away from it, there was nothing really to do with me. It was more about the business really trying to remove overheads, but it was painful at the time. And I felt a bit resentful at the time as well, if I'm honest with you. But then when you come out of that, things happen for a reason. And if I'm honest with you, if I'd have probably still been there, I'd have probably still been doing exactly the same thing, looking after the factory, doing no more than that, and not have grown as an individual myself. But it was a low point at the time, you know, very disappointed. I was upset really more about the individuals that did it. Mm. Without going into too much detail, you know, I got a month before that decision was made, I'd had my best ever appraisal within the organisation. I got paid the biggest bonus I'd had in the organisation. There was changes happening around me, was there. I spoke to my director at the time and sort of said to him, look, I've been offered another job by a fabricator that was buying from them at the time. Look, I've been offered this job. Is my position secure or should I be thinking about it? No, your position is secure. You need to sit tight. We'll get through this. And within 30 days, I was gone. And that opportunity had also gone, you know, which was a great opportunity at the time. I mean, it would have meant relocation, but nevertheless, it was a great opportunity. And I felt disappointed and let down by that. So that was a real low for me.
Yeah, that's definitely justified. Yeah. And on the flip side of that then, is there a high point that sticks out for you?
I've had lots of high points, if I'm honest with you. Those that know me here at Nationwide know that there's nothing I love better than winning a big project. That, you know, there's been a few of them while we've been here, you know, been here at Nationwide. I love that. I put a lot of work and effort, a lot of time into securing it. So when they actually drop in, you know, I'm get really quite excited by that. That doesn't mean I don't when we win the smaller projects, but the big projects, you know, every man and his dog is after them. So it's being able to get the message across properly of who we are and what we do, and for people to understand that and buy into that, particularly when you have to go to the interview stages of those and you're able to get that across to them as individuals. and then come out of that and find that you've scored really well. I find those really quite high. I won't name them, but we've had a couple of big frameworks where we've had that sort of success. And as I say, they make me really happy.
Really fantastic. Happy. Last question, sometimes the hardest. If I had to spend 2 weeks on a desert island with someone from the fenestration world, who would it be?
Do you know, I'm going to be a bit boring here, and I will actually say, can I have two?
You can have two.
I'll have Daryl and John, because they're always good company. They're always great company, and I'm sure we'll find something to have a chat about, have a giggle about, and I'm sure we'll find a way of pickling some coconut juice to get drunk on. And actually, it jumps into my mind now. I do remember Daryl saying in his podcast that he'd bring Dave Gomesall along as long as he could, for carrying the cases.
Yeah.
So I'd also bring Dave to carry the cases.
Brilliant. Kevin, thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much. It's been great speaking to you.
Brilliant chatting with you as well. And you're welcome back anytime. Open invitation. So we're always welcome for an update.
I'll look forward to it. Got to live a bit more first though.
Brilliant. Thank you, Kev. Cheers.
Cheers, Richard.
That was a great conversation with Kevin. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you'd like to hear more podcasts like this one, consider subscribing. Otherwise, thank you for listening. Until next time.